DB. All right, welcome back to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine, and I'm sitting here with a piano player in town that many of you probably are familiar with. One Mr. Chris White is joining us today on the show. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. Hi, Mike. How are you? Good to be here.
I'm doing great. And, of course, we should divulge where we're recording this. We are in the great north of Wisconsin at our annual gig with the Eric Schneider Quartet, featuring Eric Schneider on sax and Nick Schneider on bass. And, of course, Chris is on piano, and I'm playing drums. So we are up here in the woods. It's a beautiful day. And
it's nice out.
This is like the only time that you and I are actually able to catch up and do a show like this because we're both pretty swamped with things.
Yeah, busy working in Chicago doing our thing.
Exactly, yeah. Now, I want to talk a lot about, you know, your Chicago experience, playing with singers, all of your concepts and all of that. But why don't we get a little background, too?
Sure.
You're not from the United States, sir, are you?
I was actually born in the States.
Oh, you were
Everybody
born.
Thinks
okay.
I'm
all right.
I'm really Canadian, and in many ways I am because I grew up in Toronto, but I was actually born near Washington, D.C., Silver Spring.
And then then you moved to Toronto.
My parents moved up to Toronto.
How old were you?
I was one, so I don't remember much.
You're basically from Canada.
Yeah, I'm Canadian.
Okay, you know. All right. You're an import.
I'm an import.
But now, growing up in Canada, when did you start playing piano?
I started when I was five, and we actually had a piano already in our house, and I think I was just playing with it and just loved the sound and asked for lessons, and it all kind of started from there. You know, I took 10 years classical first, got bored of playing Bach, so, you know, discovered the Beatles and Billy Joel. Before jazz, I was really into rock music. You know, I was in a rock band called Free Beer. We were hoping that would get some more people to come out to our gigs.
You know, I had the same thought. I didn't do it, though. I had the same thought of starting a band, Free Beer, because if they saw that up on the sign, everybody would just show up. Where's Free Beer? And you'd be like, hey, we're right here.
That was the goal. It didn't really work, but we had fun. You know, we played covers of Rolling Stones, The Doors, and so I learned.
Sure.
I learned all the, you know, the Ray Manzarek keyboard licks, the solo on Riders in the Storm, electric pianos. So I was really into that first. Before.
But you got all your chops, too, because you started playing classical, right?
I think
it helped. So you had chops.
Yeah, I think all the training I did helped, and, you know, the reading, of course, and just allowed me to sight read better. But the pop tunes I learned by ear, though, because I didn't have sheet music for a lot of that stuff. I was just, you know, listening to it and trying to imitate.
Yeah.
So that was good ear training.
Well, and that's also, I mean, with rock, more than any other music, I think. I mean, jazz on a different level, but rock, more than any other music, it lends itself to just listening to the tune a bunch of times, figuring it out. And
sure.
I mean, that's pretty much, I guess my point is every time I see somebody reading charts of a rock tune, you don't quite get the feel of what really is happening because maybe, you know, they haven't heard it or something. So, I mean, that's...
Right, it's not internalized. Right, exactly.
You know. And that must have helped develop your ear.
Oh, it did. I think so. It all kind of goes into your training.
Sure.
You know, anything you lift, whatever style that is, anything you lift by ear is going to be great in the end. So, yeah.
What, you know, you do teaching and a lot of that now, obviously a ton of teaching.
Yep.
But ear training, I've heard from different musicians that teach, and some of them are straight out of a book, and they've got, you know, their systems and all that, and it works really well. But then there's others that actually have their students transcribe and transpose and do all of that stuff from ear and develop it. Is that something that you do with your students?
With my more advanced students, I have them transcribe. And I say, you know, you don't have to transcribe an entire solo at first. Just start with 4-8 measures. Those that are new to transcribing, I say, don't try to transcribe Art Tatum or Oscar Peterson. You're going to be pulling your hair out and just getting frustrated. But I say, take a solo by Horace Silver. You know, take a Chet Baker solo, Miles solo, and even if you play piano, take a Chet solo and try to lift it. Try to sing along with it, and then when it's in your ear, write it out. You know, so
you know when you're having somebody do that, and you know, I think it's interesting because not everybody listening to this show is a musician, obviously. So people say transcribe, and just for everybody that knows, that's basically listening to something. Writing down exactly what's happening, chord changes, notes, rhythms, all of that.
Yeah.
How does that help a musician further themselves. Now, they're not obviously trying to copy that entire solo, so the next time they play that tune, they're playing that solo. But how are they able to use that?
Well, the point is to internalize a lot of things, the vocabulary of the music. If you're transcribing a solo, you're probably doing it for a particular reason. If it's a bebop solo, a Charlie Parker solo, you're trying to learn that language. So that's
one. What's that mean? Like, you learn the language, like you're learning, like, why the notes go with this chord?
If you look at the jazz, we all say that, you know, a lot of people say jazz is a language, and you learn little fragments, phrases, and you put them together, and then you're speaking the language.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point of transcribing is just to take those little bits and pieces of information and internalize them for your own solos.
So you can spit them back out coming from your brain, right? I mean, it's
exactly. Yeah. So that you can also speak the language.
Right? See, this is hard hitting stuff here, Chris. You thought you were just going to hang out. We were going to talk about hockey and piano playing and football and whatever else. But see, this is totally different than what we talk about on our breaks.
Yes.
Right. See, we're getting into it now. All right. So getting back to you playing in Free Beer.
Yeah, back to that.
I'll bring it right back to you playing in Free Beer.
Mike, you should have seen my hair back then. It was down to my shoulders. You had long hair, too.
I had long hair, too, but I was not smart enough to have the band Free Beer. The name of my band was called Big Sandwich. So people would see that on the board out in front of the clubs and call up and say, what kind of sandwich do you have on special? And when they found out it was a band, nobody cared.
Yeah.
So at least Free Beer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I keep trying. Yeah. I keep trying constantly.
Right.
Okay,
so,
so when was your first experience with jazz? I mean, what took you from playing the rock stuff and just, you know, launched you into
school,
the jazz scene?
It was the end of high school. We had a really great music instructor at our school who actually didn't really know how to teach jazz but could, you know, play recordings and say, hey, this is good stuff, check it out. So he'd play, you know, like Oscar Peterson, he'd play Rob McConnell on the Boss Brass. He was at this... guy was a trumpet player, and he just sort of introduced us that way through osmosis. He didn't really teach us how to play. He said, hey, just check out this great stuff. And then on our own, we had to figure things out. Like my friend Al played alto, and he showed up one day with the Charlie Parker omnibook, and he's like, hey, check this out. I opened it, like, I got dizzy looking at all these notes, like, what the heck is it? So, and I didn't even know who Bird was.
Yeah.
So we were listening to recordings, and I'm like, this is really cool. Like, they're creating something, like brand new melodies, and improvising was a whole great experience. And I think the first album I ever got was Miles Davis Relaxing. I was lucky. I didn't buy a Kenny G album first. You know, it was Miles Davis.
Could have gone either way at that point.
I could have been a smooth jazz artist, but I wasn't, no. So, but yeah, that was my, I think, first introduction to jazz, that Miles recording. And hearing Red Garland, I was like, this is what I want to do.
Sure.
This is amazing. You know, just the sound of that album.
Was there a big band, like, at your school? I mean, were you playing
I was also playing in well, I was in the jazz band, the R&B band.
You had all that in high school?
Yeah, we were lucky. Yeah, it was a really well-supported program that we were a part of. So, and I was also in concert band. I couldn't play piano, so I picked drums. I was a drummer for a while.
At least you had some sense back.
Yeah. Played percussion, played timpani, you know, all that stuff.
Well, you can play mallets too, right?
So. Well, part of the transition was being able to play marimba, you know, because it's a keyboard instrument. I got involved with the concert band stuff.
Now, growing up in Toronto, I mean, I know they have a huge jazz festival every year. Was that happening back then?
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
I started going to that when I was in high school, and I would volunteer just to get close to the artists and talk to them. I hung out with Ahmad Jamal. I actually rode in a van with him just because I was a volunteer. And he was quiet. He was meditating, I think, so he didn't really say much.
So you didn't badger him the whole time?
No, I wanted to ask him a million questions. I gave a hat to Joe Henderson. Met him. That was really cool.
You gave him your hat?
Not my hat, but I gave him a Toronto Jazz Festival hat.
Oh, okay.
You know,
right.
Say, hey, Joe, here.
Okay. Just trying to clarify that.
So I met Gene Harris. You know, actually being part of that festival was really cool. I look back at it and say, yeah, I'm glad I volunteered for that.
Well, you know, you probably got inspiration because it's different than just watching somebody. As you know, hanging out or just being around them, like close-knit yeah. quarters, it's just, it inspires you, I think.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I asked people for lessons. They all turned me down. I remember talking to Rini Rosnes and saying, hey, I just love your playing. Can I have a lesson with you? She said, no, I don't teach. Go talk to Kenny Barron. So, yeah. But,
and that was when you were in high school.
That was when I was actually in college. I don't have a music undergrad degree, although I have a master's and a doctorate in jazz. My undergrad was English.
Oh, okay.
And that wasn't going anywhere.
So you figured you'd jump right into music.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed a lot more interesting, more fun, you know. So.
Oscar Peterson living there? I mean, that's where he's from, right? So, I mean, did you see him around town? Was he playing in town when he wasn't touring
and
stuff?
Yeah, I saw him a few times. Actually, I have a good story about this. My very first gig was in Mississauga, Ontario, where he lived.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at this restaurant called the Dutch Kitchen. You know, they had a piano there, and I was just starting out, 18. And I went to Oscar Peterson was signing autographs at a new record store that was opening up. And so I was really nervous. I brought my business cards with me, and I was waiting in line, and he signed my Night Train cassette. You know, so I still have it. And then I said, hey, Oscar, if you want to come out and hear some great jazz, come to the Dutch Kitchen Wednesday night, 8:00. I'm there all summer. And he looked at my card and he said, yeah, okay. And he put it in his pocket.
Yeah.
He never showed up, but
oh.
I waited 11 weeks.
looking all around the room.
But just the thought of him actually maybe showing up, because it was really close to where he lived. I did know where he lived.
Yeah.
I sound like I'm a stalker here.
mild stalker. You were 18, though, so we'll let that
18.
Go, you know.
So
well, that's
cool.
Pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
I mean, just being able to have that guy in town and the fact that you're sitting there playing, wondering if he's going to walk in.
Yeah.
You probably practiced for that gig on the off chance that he did walk in. You didn't want to really
be
horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, but, he was a fixture in town. And he toured a lot, but I saw him a number of times. And, of course, he was a huge influence.
Sure.
You're probably going to ask me at some point who my influences were. That was number one.
Number one, yeah. Well, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
And it was really easy to get any of his recordings. You know, they're readily available. There was this place called Sam the Record Man downtown. Huge record store. It's no longer there. On Yonge Street in Toronto. And they had every Oscar Peterson album. And I tried to buy as many as I could.
Sure.
So.
Was there's a lot of jazz clubs in Toronto. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think people realize like how big of Toronto's about the size of Chicago, right?
Yeah. What's Chicago now?
Maybe a little bit more. Yeah. It's about 3 million.
Yeah. It's almost the same now if you include the burbs. But, there aren't as many clubs now, but there were some really great ones. Top of the Senator was a famous one where I saw Oscar, and I saw many amazing musicians like Ray Brown and just all the greats that Joe Henderson that came through. And there was a place called the Montreal Bistro that featured piano players. And I saw like, a lot of great piano players there, like Dave McKenna and Kenny Barron and Jay McShann, you know, like awesome players. So, but that's no longer there either. So,
you were able to go and check things out. Like, you know, a lot of the musicians in Chicago go to the Showcase or go to the Green Mill. So, I mean, it was kind of like the same kind of scene where you were able to be around it and see it live and all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, why don't we take a listen to a track by Mr. Chris White here?
Okay.
Why don't we take a listen off the I guess it's a trio / quartet on some tunes. I think this is a trio tune we're gonna
it
play,
is.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is off your album, Tributaries.
Tributaries.
Hey, we're in Wisconsin. What are we supposed to do? Tributaries. And this was recorded about, 8 years ago? No, six years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it features Nick Schneider on bass, Mike Jeffers, that's me, on drums,
mm-hmm.
Chris White on piano.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of the tune we're going
to
hear?
This one's called Down in St. Kitts, sort of a tribute to, the song St. Thomas was an inspiration for this. So it's a calypso. Thank you.
All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed here on 90.9 FM WDCB. I'm Mike Jeffers, the publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine. And we just heard a tune from Chris White's CD Tributaries. And the name of the tune is Down in St. Kitts. And we are still here with Chris White. So let's talk a little bit about how you went from Toronto.
Okay.
And you finished your English degree.
Yeah.
Your English bachelor's degree.
BA in English, correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then you decided, hey, I'm going to be a jazz musician. So you went to the University of Indiana, which is one of the top schools with David Baker.
Yeah.
How did you find out about Indiana?
Well, you know, I was shopping around, looking through catalogs, thinking about where to go. And I've heard, you know, David Baker is so famous in the jazz world, jazz educator. Everyone knows about David. Mm-hmm. He's put out a million books, and one of the books I came across in high school is called How to Play Bebop.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I wanted to know how to play bebop, so I bought that. You know, that's a great title.
I love that. So. You know, I love the. You're right, because it's like people always ask me, well, why'd you come up with the name Chicago Jazz Magazine? Well, what was I going to call it? That's what's in the magazine. So I love that. The name of that tune is great.
It's
How to Play Bebop.
Yeah, it's obvious, right?
And sounds good.
And he
and he's a cello player too. We should point
now
out.
He used to be a trombonist till he got injured in a car accident. He couldn't play after he was injured, so his jaw couldn't play. So he picked up cello. I think he tried a few instruments, piano, and he finally settled on cello because nobody else was playing jazz cello.
Right,
and that's why he did it. He's still playing today. So
he's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh yeah, long time.
Yeah.
Many years. I can't even count how many, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So did you audition there, or what did you?
I did. You know, I sent a tape in back then, way back when the cassettes were still around.
Oh boy,
mid to late 90s.
You're old.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and I recorded. I remember I recorded Scrabble from the Apple, and I thought, this is a bebop tune. Maybe this will increase my chances of getting in if I play a tune that I know David will like. So recorded that just. Sent it in and also went for a live audition, met with David, and really liked the facilities, liked the campus. Bloomington is so beautiful, you know, so nice campus. And just, I got in, accepted for the master's degree, and was a TA for David for 2 years, and I stayed in Indiana for three and a half years.
That had to be kind of interesting, though, because most of the time when people come in to get their master's, they're coming from a bachelor's.
Yeah, in music
already.
Yeah.
You know, so when you went in, I mean, wasn't he like, well, so you have your English degree. Why do you want to go into music? It's not like the normal progression.
Yeah, I was surprised I even was considered because I figured, well, yeah, you have to have. But, you know, he heard the tape and said, this guy can play.
Yeah.
So whatever it takes to get him in, let's get him in.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't have to take too many remedial courses, and I just, you know, got through the degree pretty quickly. And
how long
just,
were you down there? A couple of years?
Well, yeah, I was there 3.5 years total.
Okay.
And I stayed an extra year just to get more playing experience and just, you know, hang out and learn as much as I could.
Hang out.
David. Yeah, hang out, right. to just learn from David, you know, because he's such a wealth of information.
Sure.
He was a huge influence on me and my teaching. Like, he's a master teacher, but the best teacher I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's hugely influential to many, many musicians.
How big is the music school down there?
Huge. Probably 2,000 students
total.
You know, it's got the jazz area. It's strong in opera. It's strong in all kinds of areas. So pretty famous program.
Yeah. Okay. Because I've always heard of the, you know, University of Indiana, University of North Texas, Berkeley. I mean, they're all in that same Miami.
Yeah.
They're all in that same thing. But, you know, you always wonder, I mean, especially since you're getting such hands-on access to David Baker and being able to work with him and stuff, you always wonder, well, how many students are down there?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, at the time, I mean, the jazz department, maybe, I don't know the numbers, but decent sized program. Mm-hmm. But the classes aren't huge.
Right.
His improv class fills up. I mean, that's probably, and the jazz history course he teaches that's over like 100-120 people in that class.
Really?
And, yeah. So that's one of the most popular courses on campus.
What do you think? So, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about, so you have your master's and you also just got your doctorate.
Yeah.
And, from U of I.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, you're obviously, and you're teaching at three different colleges.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of commuting.
A lot of commuting, a lot of private students and everything. I mean, when you're teaching people and people are going into the music field and they're going to get their degree, what do you tell them? I mean, do you, obviously you don't need a degree. You can either play or you can't play. But what's the advantage of getting a degree in music, do you feel?
Well, anyone that wants to teach at the collegiate level needs to have a master's minimum. And now they raise the bar. It's a doctorate. That's, you know, why I went back to school. So that's one reason, of course, to go to schools if you're interested in teaching yourself at a collegiate level. But, you know, just to have access to great facilities, teachers, you know, all that kind of stuff that you can't normally get on your own.
Right.
And I think one huge reason to go to school is to network and make lifelong connections, because the people I met at IU are still a part of my life, and I talk to them regularly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I get hired by them if I go to a different city and they're in New York and they're there and they want to use me. I'm there. So that's happened. And just staying in touch with my professors has helped my career a lot. So I think networking is a big thing. Mm-hmm. About why you'd want to go to school.
Yeah. Well, so you get done at Indiana, and I apologize. I haven't been calling you Dr. White. I've just been calling you Chris White. So we'll get back to Dr. White.
That's better.
Hey, man, you've got all this education. You've got to take advantage of it.
I might as well, right?
Yeah, right. Have me call you Dr. White.
Yeah.
So you're done at Indiana. How did you end up in Chicago? That's obviously the normal trek, but you're coming from Toronto.
Right.
So
I could have gone back home and worked, but yeah, Chicago is probably the closest big city to Bloomington. It's about three hours away, and I really didn't know anything about the scene. Two people convinced me to move to Chicago. One was Mr. Nick Schneider.
Oh, Nick Schneider.
Who I, you know, had been teaching with at Shell Lake, because I was actually a student at the Shell Lake Arts Center. When I was... Yeah, my first year of when I was doing my master's degree at IU, Luke Gillespie, the piano instructor at IU, brought me up to be an assistant.
And we should tell everybody, Shell Lake Arts Center is, what town's that in? In Shell Lake, right?
Yes.
Shell Lake, Wisconsin.
That's the name, yes, Wisconsin. Not far from here, actually. We're not too far from it right now. A couple hours.
Okay, all right. But it's up on the western side of the state. It's on the way to Eau Claire, isn't it?
It's an hour north of Eau Claire.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's about an hour east of the Twin Cities.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they have a summer jazz camp program.
Yes.
They have a summer big band. They have a lot of other programs for music. And everything.
Mm-hmm.
You teach there. Nick Schneider teaches there. A host of other great educators teach there. So that's a summer jazz camp. So if you have some young kids that are looking to, you know, get really submerged in jazz for an entire week or two weeks, Shell Lake Jazz Camp, and you're still teaching there now. So you've got a long connection with that place.
Yeah, so, you know, I met Nick there, and then I talked to him about, as I was finishing my degree, I was thinking about where am I going to go, and he said, man, move to Chicago, you could work as a piano player, there's lots of work, great musicians there, great scene. So that was part of it. I also talked to Rufus Reed.
Mm-hmm.
I was, my last year of my master's degree, I was part of the Steen's Institute for Jazz Artists at the Ravinia Festival program, and David Baker brought me up, and I worked with James Moody, Ramsey Lewis came in and helped us. Who else is there? Nathan Davis and Rufus Reed, and I think he's from Chicago, or he spent many years in before he moved to New York, and he said, man, Chicago's got everything New York has to offer. It's affordable. You can work.
Yeah.
So he said, yeah, consider Chicago. So I guess two bass players convinced me to move to where I am now.
Well, it's two guys that might hire you, though.
Yeah,
right?
I know. right, exactly. So that was the connection. And
okay. So you just came up.
Just came up, packed my car, and found a place.
Moving to the big city.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I started working. I went to the jam sessions and, did what probably a lot of people do, hand out cards, talk to people, network, and just started working.
Well, I remember because you and I was in town about 4 years before you got to town.
Uh-huh.
And then you came to town, and Nick and I introduced you. I think we were on a gig together or something with Nick.
Yeah.
And then we started playing together in different situations.
Yeah.
And You were doing that Frank Lamphere gig steady, weren't you? It was you and I, and you were playing left-handed bass.
You mean the Sopranos?
Bass. That's Sopranos,
yes.
Yeah.
That might have been where we met, actually. Or one of our first gigs,
oh, maybe
right?
That was, yeah.
That was a while ago. 2001 or 2.
You were kicking left-handed bass,
I was.
Too. That's right, and we were playing every Sinatra, Dean Martin, yeah. Italian tune known to man. That was actually a great learning experience.
I was going to say, I learned a lot of tunes, and that's how I built up my repertoire through working with, well, primarily singers,
yeah,
vocalists, because the fact I had to transpose meant I had to really know the tune well. You know, you can't fake that kind of stuff.
No.
If you have to put it in a different key, you got to know the tune.
Well, and that's something that like young players... Well, even older players.
Mm-hmm.
I see so many people now with not even the fake books, but they have the iPads with the fake books and the iPads
yeah.
and all of that. And they're not learning the tunes like yeah. you had to learn the tunes. I mean, I remember you had to learn those tunes
yeah.
with Lamphere. And after we played a while, I mean, you knew those. I mean, we're talking about like obscure Dean Martin tunes. That you would know. I mean,
yeah.
you know, I can't even remember some of the tunes. What is it, Too Many Indians in the Kitchen or something was
like
one
that.
Of those tunes.
Yeah.
And both of us know that tune.
Right.
I mean, it's bizarro. You know, when I play stuff with people from out of town every once
yeah.
in a while, and they go, do you know this tune? I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that tune.
Right.
They're like, why do you know that tune?
Right.
You know, but that
yeah.
really helps you
mm-hmm.
as a musician knowing tunes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the key
yeah, well,
to the whole thing.
Yeah, Frank would give me CDs and say, hey, listen to this Buddy Greco album. I want you to learn the song, and I want you to learn the style. And actually, Buddy Greco, I'm just thinking about it now. The way he comps for himself was kind of influential to me, just like how to do that, you know, how to place the chords in the right spot.
Yeah.
You know, listening to people accompany themselves is really useful.
Well, and playing, and you do a lot of playing with singers now.
Yeah, I
Sam Fazio,
yeah.
and you have a gig coming up. You're going to do one of the Jazz Vespers at the Lutheran Church over
yeah.
in Niles on
yeah.
May 18th at 7 p.m.
Right.
It's a Sunday night. And Bruce Anderson is the pastor
mm-hmm.
over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's been doing these Jazz Vespers
yeah.
forever. Actually, I'll give the address, 8450 North Shermer Road in Niles. And who are you going to be with? You're
really
another
singer,
right?
A wonderful vocalist named Marianne Reel, who I've been working with for about a year now, on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And she's great, and I look forward to doing that. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you're playing with a lot of singers, really increased your vocabulary and all that. But
yeah.
you also always have kept up playing in different situations, so you're playing with
yes.
rhythm sections and stuff.
Right.
But it seems to me like you're always learning tunes, though.
Yeah, well, you have to, I mean, to keep up with it, right?
How? I guess we'll just jump back to that, because I want to understand this.
Sure.
How different is it if you learn a tune and you really know the ins and outs of the tune as opposed to just reading it out of the fake book?
How different?
Well, I mean, you know what I mean.
It's
I mean,
really different. Well,
okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, you only
that's
learn...
why you're a doctor.
Yeah.
You've got these great answers.
You can, if you're only learning out of a fake book, it's just surface level. You're not
yeah.
absorbing much except what's there on the page, right? You don't really get how the chords work or how, you know, just it's very superficial. If you're not checking out multiple recordings or really digging into it deeply and
mm-hmm.
listening to how to phrase the melody. Of course, there's a lot of information that's not there. And well, you know, the iReal B app, there's no melody. It's just chord symbols. It's kind of like, if you remember the Pocket Changes
oh,
books?
Oh, yeah, sure.
They're useful, but it's, yeah, only half the
oh, there's
picture.
No melody.
No, there's no melody.
Oh.
But and now you can just press a button and it will transpose it for you.
Oh,
you don't even have to think about transposing.
Wow.
Does all the thinking for you.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So
you're not allowed to use that in college, I would imagine.
Only in a pinch if we don't have a lead sheet. But, I mean, it has its purpose. It's good for practicing. You know, you can change the tempo and the style.
Sure.
If you're working on a tune. But, like, you know, relying on that on a gig is, yeah, it's not the best thing in the world to do. So.
Well, let's take another listen to a tune from you. This
all
is
right.
off your solo album. Now, what's the name of the
yeah.
solo album?
It's called Young at Heart.
Okay.
And I released it about 10 years ago. I used to play at Nordstrom department store in
oh,
Oak Brook
right, yeah.
where they had a piano. And every track on that album is a result of a compilation of all the requests I got. So my goal was to take all those requests, put them on a CD, and then sell hundreds of copies. Of course.
How's that going?
That went... Well, they took the piano away. Just when I finished my CD, they said, okay, we're changing up our music program. No more live music. We're going to take the piano out.
We're going to play this CD that you just recorded. Now we don't need you here anymore. Go away.
So, unfortunately, that's when they took out their live music.
Your whole marketing plan just left.
Yeah. Oh. But so that's the result of my work at Nordstrom. I was there for 4 years. That's another experience where I learned a ton of tunes just playing solo piano all day.
Yeah.
Because we had these long shifts, 5-6 hour shifts, and I was learning tunes and getting requests, and no matter what they were, I'd learn them, you know.
Yeah.
No matter how bad the song was, I'd say, okay, I'm going to learn it.
Well, and if people want to pick up either one of your CDs, it's chriswhitepiano.com.
That's right.
chriswhitepiano.com. Mm-hmm. So why don't we take a listen? Now we're going to hear the Rainbow Connection.
Yeah.
And what is the, I know that you just told me why
it's
you recorded it.
It was a request.
Okay.
A lot of people think of the Muppet Show when they hear this song. And when I played it, people would say, oh, thank you for playing that. Reminds me of Kermit the Frog. Reminds me of the Muppets. And so a lot of kids like that one. And I used to play that over at Nordstrom. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a listen to your version of the Rainbow Connection here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, chicagojazz.com. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine. I'm sitting here with Dr. Chris Weitz, and we're discussing jazz, Chicago, Toronto, your recordings, Nordstrom, your marketing plan, everything.
Free beer.
Free beer.
The rock band.
We're getting the whole thing dialed in now. I'm telling you. You know, we should just, you know, forget this whole Chris White trio thing. Just free beer.
You want to start a band called Free Beer?
Let's do it, man. I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, I think it would work. People would show up. Where's the free beer?
They're over there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, forget it then. All right, so a little bit more. So you're teaching at a bunch of different colleges now. You're teaching, you're on faculty where? At North Central?
North Central College in Naperville. I'm at North Park University in the city and also Lake Forest College north of Chicago.
And so. Private lessons, are you running ensembles? Or?
Yeah, mostly private lessons at this point. I usually teach a course or two a year. I just taught an arranging course, jazz arranging at North Park. I coach a combo at North Park, and I also coach a combo at North Central.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you've got a lot of things
I've
going
got a
on,
lot
and
going
you're
on.
Driving all over the suburbs here.
I just thankfully I have satellite radio in my car. Keeps me going.
Well, so. you're also going to be heard if anybody's out in the Naperville, Glen Ellen area, which we all know that there's a lot of listeners to WDCB out in that area. You're going to be performing as part of a faculty concert on Friday, May 23rd.
That's right.
At Madden Hall for North Central. Whose concert is it actually?
Our vibraphone instructor Brad Sturtz it's his concert, but I'll be part of the rhythm section on that.
Okay. Yeah. So they can get more information, chriswhitepiano.com, because I'm sure you have all that stuff listed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about the gig that we had for 4 years at the Peninsula Hotel. We'll leave out a lot of it. We'll leave out a lot of
all
it.
All the stories we could tell about that, right?
I think the coolest thing about it, though, and a lot of our listeners would find it interesting, but, you know, you and I could talk probably for 5 hours about this, and it was there's a lot of stories. But it was kind of cool because being there playing every weekend, we were there Fridays and Saturdays from 8:30 until midnight.
Yeah.
Stephanie Browning was with us. Eric Remschneider was playing electric cello. He was from the Smashing Pumpkins, and everybody knew who he was. But it was kind of cool, you know, some of those celebrities that came in.
Yeah.
You know, I still remember the one time when Dustin Hoffman.
That's what I remember most, too.
Oh, my God. So.
And Emma Thompson. Remember they were sitting, like, on that ledge by the window, listening and smiling at us?
It was amazing. They because I'm playing drums, Chris's back was to the room.
And you were doing this, one of these little nods. I'm, what? I turned around, like, oh, my gosh.
Well, remember, because we started playing, and his head whipped around and started staring right at us. So we had two choices. It was either, like, he was really digging it, or he wanted us fired immediately because we're playing too loud and we're interrupting his dinner.
Yeah.
And usually, if that happens, then we're fired immediately if Dustin Hoffman wants us fired. But he came up. And he sits down on the vent.
Yes.
Right on the floor, right behind you.
Yep.
mm-hmm. and he's staring at Eric playing this electric cello, mm-hmm. and I remember mm-hmm. him standing, and of course, I'm playing drums, so I don't have to pay attention to anything. I'm just, hey, I'm playing drums, I'm, you know. And he looks over and waves Emma Thompson over.
Yep.
And she comes over with his drink, and they sit on the floor.
Yeah.
And do you remember what happened? Like, we got done with that tune, yeah. and he, like, just goes to Eric. He goes, what is that thing?
Yeah, that was one of the first things he said, yeah. And then I started talking to him, and, yeah. you know, it blew me away because, first of all, he's so humble.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
he didn't want to talk about himself, and he was just asking us. They were both asking us all kinds of questions. Remember Emma Thompson said, so do you guys rehearse? When you, and we said, no, we just show up and play. And they were like, really? And then they said, well, it's, yeah, the improvisation's like acting, and they were making a connection between the two.
Yeah.
And then Dustin Hoffman said, man, one of the regrets I had was not continuing my piano. I wanted to, he goes, I love Art Tatum. I love Stefan Grappelli. And he said, one of the things I always wanted to be was, well, what you're doing, a jazz piano player. I'm like, really? You wanted to do? I
right.
couldn't believe what he said. So, yeah, I had a great conversation with him about music. And
yeah, they hung out for like 45 minutes
did.
Or whatever.
Yeah, it was incredible. And so, yeah, that we met a lot. Well, we met a few celebrities, but those two stands out the most, I think,
yeah.
that meeting that one night. So
that's what I was going to say. I mean, we always used to see Dave Matthews and the band down
right.
there. And remember the one time when Ozzy came in with the dogs
yes.
and they let the dogs loose in there
yeah.
and they're running around and Ozzy's at the chocolate buffet. And
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Right.
And we're just going about our business playing, you know, and yeah. there's all this other, you know, ancillary stuff. But I think that's one of the coolest things about being a musician.
Right.
Is that, you know, you tell me what you think. But I think mm-hmm. it's cool that, like, you know, people get excited
mm-hmm.
when they go to the Peninsula
mm-hmm.
or when they
mm-hmm.
go to the Green Mill or when they go to Andy's
yeah.
or whatever. But we're in those places all the time.
Right.
See the back end of the place.
Right.
We get to know the employees.
Yeah.
We get to see everything that's happening. We
yep.
get to, and being there on a regular basis, you get to watch the room and see what goes on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
it's really cool. I think that's one of those things that people don't really think about as a musician,
mm-hmm.
especially a working musician. But I mean,
right.
you know, what other career could you have that you get yeah. to experience that kind of stuff?
And it's cool also if you're touring and getting out
yeah.
or going to New York City. Like, I went to, I guess you had Sam on, I guess, a couple
right.
months ago.
Yep.
And he talked
Sam
about
Fazio.
Sam Fazio. He talked about Feinstein's and just being in New York and being part of that was really great. And just, yeah, it's so exciting. And you never know who you're going to run into at these clubs. So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a lot of work to get
right.
to the point where you're able to do what, you know,
sure.
you're doing. But
mm-hmm.
When you get there and you go through everything and you do all the business side of it and everything and you're actually
right.
there and you're in the moment, it's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally cool.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of, we touched on Oscar Peterson a long time ago. He was
yeah.
your inspiration.
Yeah.
Why don't we pick somebody? Who would you want to play like nowadays that is somebody that you listen to constantly or love listening to as a inspiration to your playing now?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of great players in the scene right now. And, there's one guy, Eric Reed, he stands
sure.
out. I mean, he's a great player. I saw him at the showcase last time he was here in town.
He's actually coming May 22nd
right.
through the 25th
yeah.
to the jazz showcase.
I think he's an incredible player. I think he's a complete musician. Like, his writing, his
mm-hmm.
arranging, his concept of swing, and I hear a lot of lineage in his playing. He pays respect. I hear the influence of Ahmad Jamal, Monk, huge. He's really into Monk. He's really into everybody that I like.
Yeah. Well.
So his music really resonates with me. So.
So why don't we hear a tune from him? What tune do you think you want to hear? We were talking a little bit about New York City medley.
Sure.
I mean, is that a good one?
That sounds good.
I'm not trying to push things on you.
Well, I think it sounds good. Let's do that. Yeah, it's a medley of Ottoman in New York and Skating in Central Park. There's another one. Yeah. So
sure. All right. Well, why don't we go out with that?
Okay.
And good. I'm glad we caught up. I'm glad
yeah,
you
man.
Could be on the show.
That's fun.
And now we got to go play a gig up here in the North Woods. So we're
gonna
go out here with the New York City medley. It's off of Eric Reed's album Manhattan Melodies on Chicago Jazz Revealed 90.9 FM WDCB ChicagoJazz.com.